I'm Erin Miller, and I'm here with Mark Farkas, executive editor of C-SPAN's new book on the Supreme Court, which features interviews with all of the current justices and several court experts. The book is based on a documentary series that C-SPAN did last year. Mr. Farkas, what was your role in creating that video documentary?
My role is really, it's sort of a soup to nuts oversight of it and involvement in it, you know, really starting with the very first approach to the Supreme Court, you know, scheduling the shoots, going over to the Supreme Court to oversee the videotaping, doing the interviews with all of the historians, curators, journalists, and attorneys. And then after that, after you've got the material, my role is to really produce it.
What gave you the idea to transform that video documentary into a book?
The idea to transform it into a book really didn't come along until the very end of the process. We had just gotten our last two interviews with Justice Alito, who had originally, at the beginning of the process, said no, he would not do an interview, but he had a change of heart. And then we got the interview with the newest Justice Sotomayor. Brian Lamb and Susan Swain, a couple of our other folks, were reading through the transcripts, and it sort of hit us all that no one had ever gotten all the Supreme Court justices together for a single project. And then, frankly, just reading through the transcripts, we really got a sense of how things work over there. And it's, you know, in terms of the branches of government, I think the least is known about how the Supreme Court works. So it was a window into a process that's mysterious to a lot of folks. And we made sure in each interview to talk to them about something that had something to do with their personality, how they went about their job, their backgrounds. So it also sort of hit us that, you know, what a great window into some of the people who really have the most effect on a very intimate part of people's lives. We thought it'd make for good reading for folks who wanted to know how the court works, and good reading for those who wanted to know more about these people as human beings, not just someone in a black robe.
So you mentioned that this was the first time someone had gotten interviews with all of the justices. How did C-SPAN get permission for those interviews?
You know, I guess my guess about why it hasn't happened before is that they don't do a lot of interviews. They do get out there and speak and teach during the summers, but you know, for sit-down interviews, they just don't do a lot. You know, you really don't see a lot of them on television, especially. And why they did it for us, you know, I think a couple reasons. One, I think they look at C-SPAN and say, okay, well, they're going to ask me what they want to ask me, but they're not going to take it out of context, which is a, you know, is a potential problem. And so I think there was that. And then, you know, the other thing that we found out during the course of the project is that these nine people talk to each other a lot. Every day after oral argument, they have lunch together. And the rule of that lunch is that they don't really talk about the cases. They really talk about, you know, what they've done over the weekend or family. Or perhaps they talked about this project amongst themselves. And the chief had done an interview. And one by one, these folks start coming on board. And maybe they talked to each other. The other big help was, I think, their public information officer, Kathy Arberg, was in support of the project. And so I think she was a tremendous help in convincing them that, hey, you should feel comfortable in talking with them.
Is it right that this was the first interview David Souter agreed to give on television during his entire time on the bench?
It is indeed correct. It was David Souter's first ever television interview in 19 years on the bench. And I have to tell you, we first got the note from Alito about 3 days after we sent in the letters to all the justices. And then 2 days later, we heard back from two others. And Justice Breyer, who we were hoping and we thought he would do something because he's a bit more accessible than some of the justices. But lo and behold, the other one that said yes was David Souter.
Wow.
So, you know, we called Kathy. I said, are you sure? He hadn't gone through them. He actually sent a letter back to us, to Brian Lamb, because we wrote the letters from Brian to each one of the justices. And sure enough, he said yes.
Do you have any thoughts on why he agreed now?
He agreed because when we started out the process for the idea for the documentary, we knew at least we wanted to do something on the building and what went on inside the building. And because if you don't get the justices, you don't really get a good window into what happens inside there. And so that was sort of, we came upon that because all of them said yes. So, but Justice Souter, knowing that part of the documentary was on the building itself, had a very, very close friend who was an expert historian on the architecture of the Supreme Court and the symbolism and why it was built the way it was built. So, but his friend had passed away, and so it was really a tribute to his friend to sort of pass on what he had learned from him to us. And so he wanted to talk about very specific part of the Supreme Court, and that was the building's architecture. Now, it came down to it, we asked him several other questions that had nothing to do with the architecture, and some of his best answers we thought were on those topics. So you see a little bit in the documentary from him about the architecture of the building and its symbolism, but you, frankly, more of him is talking about oral argument and other parts of the court that that he thinks are important.
Now, the interview with Souter doesn't appear in the book. Is there a story behind that?
After we did the interview, he came to Kathy Arberg and said, I don't want that interview to be used in its entirety. They can use portions of it for their documentary. And we had a back and forth with them, more than a back and forth. It was a back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And what he kept telling them and then telling us in letters was that he did not want to grant us an entire interview because he had said no to everybody else during his 19 years. He just didn't think it was fair. But he was willing to let us use parts of it in the documentary.
Did all of the interviews take place in the justices' chambers or just some of them?
There's three of them that took place there. Justice Breyer, Justice Ginsburg, and Justice Stevens were kind enough to let us go into their chambers. We, in the letters that we wrote to them, we requested three things. One, we'd love to come into your chambers. Two, we'd like to sit down for an interview with you and talk about the court and your job. And three, can you take us to a place in the building that has some special meaning or there's a story there for you? And you know, we'd take all three or we'd take one of the three, or, you know, we'll take anything. If you got a better idea, we'll take that too. And so those three were the ones who said, yeah, please come into my chamber and let's combine all three of these with touring around here. Let's talk about the court. Let's talk about how I do my job. And let's, you know, this chamber actually holds a lot of the things that I think are special about my experience here.
Was that the first time that video cameras had been allowed into any of the chambers?
You know, we did a lot of research, and the only time I had ever seen a camera in their chambers were for their Supreme Court theater film. They had hired a production company, and there were two or three shots in chambers of justices basically quietly working at their desks. So, to our knowledge, this was the first time a television network had ever been allowed such access into the chambers.
Okay. What other parts of the building were you granted access to that the public can't normally visit?
The robing room, which is obviously where they go right before they go out onto the bench. The justice's dining room, which, you know, when we thought about, you know, okay, we wanted to go in there, but we didn't know the full story of what happened in there. But for us, it became a really unique part of the story because it does play into them as human beings and the collegiality between them. So the justice's dining room was a really interesting place to go to. The lawyer's lounge is a place that the public does not get the chance to see, and it's got its own story. So all these places really have we didn't want to go in them just because it's a room. We wanted to go in there and try to bring the room, give it some, humanity by, talking with folks who are in these places and they serve a function. The East and West Conference Room, the public sometimes gets a chance to see these, but more often than not, the public does not because it's not on the special tour. You've got to know someone to get into the conference rooms. They've got their own story to tell as well. So, between the chambers, the robing room, the justices' dining room, those type of places, we really got a sense that you were getting a window behind the scenes of the court.
When you were interviewing the justices, were any subjects off limits?
Yes. They're never going to talk about the cases that they have in front of them, the cases that they have that they're going to grant cert for in the future, or cases in the past. They just don't talk about those because, that sort of, gives a window into what they may decide in future cases. So cases were off the table. And that was fine with us because they don't do that with anybody. And that wasn't the point of our documentary. So that was the only thing that was off the table, was really talking about specific cases. And the one thing that we decided here that we were not going to ask them about was cameras in the courtroom, because we thought it was self-serving. And we sent a letter over to the chief, every year probably, the same request, asking for, if you're going to test some technology on the courtroom, we'd be glad to help. And so, that was off the table purposely for us because we didn't want to feel self-serving.
Even though the justices didn't talk about their cases, are there any revelations from the interviews that were not publicly known before?
Well, the big one that stands out was Sonia Sotomayor's call from the White House.
Yeah.
That was something that, when she still still has not done another television interview, as far as we know. So we got the first interview with her after she was sworn in, after her investiture ceremony. And, you know, we did talk with her about what it was like, you know, for history's sake, tell us about the call from the president. So it was a personal moment, and I think it also sort of tells you something about the way they view the, you know, their job. If you're a real court follower, you may know some of the things that the justices mentioned in the interviews. If you're not a court follower, I think a lot of it is revealing. I don't think a lot of people have any idea, one, how big an office do they have? Two, what is their caseload? How many cases come to the court? How many do they take? So I think because there's not television cameras in there like there are in the House and the Senate, you don't have this understanding of the public's mindset about what they do over there. So for me, this is the third documentary I've worked on. I did the Capitol and the White House before. But the Supreme Court to me was by far the most revealing because I didn't know a lot about it going in. And when you think about that and what effect that place has on people's lives, you really ought to know how they work and you really ought to know who these people are who are making the decisions.
One last question about the justice interviews. Why are different ones different lengths?
That is a good question. It all comes down to, I think, timing and comfort level once they get into the interview. We asked, for every single one of the interviews, we asked for 45 minutes to an hour. That was what we'd love to have. And I'd say 90% of the time, the Public Information Office would come back to us and say, you have half an hour. And then you come down to the actual day of the interview, and a perfect example is the Chief Justice. We had a half an hour schedule with him, and I think he was enjoying talking about the role of the chief, and he's a history major in college. So he enjoyed talking about the history of the court. He enjoyed talking about his job and how the place worked. And so we went on for almost an hour. Same thing with Justice Kennedy. He was scheduled for half an hour, and they said, he's really on a tight time schedule, so we'll have to keep it to a half an hour. And then he goes, you know what? You need some more time, take some more time. It came down to the specific justices and how much time they had and how much, part of that was driven by were they enjoying themselves or were they not enjoying themselves.
As you've mentioned before, the book also includes interviews with veteran Supreme Court reporters, including mm-hmm. SCOTUS Blog's Lyle Denniston. Why did you decide to include those and what do you think that they add?
Talking to a journalist is a completely different thing than talking to a justice. They've got a completely different perspective on the traditions there, the ones they think still work or the ones they think that are outdated. They are free to talk about the cases and be a little bit more blunt about some of the personalities over there. And so that gives a balance to what the justices are talking about. Then the attorneys, to me, that's a huge part. Suffice it to say, what goes on over there, you've got the nine up on the bench, and then you've got the appellate attorneys who are trying to make their case and have done the briefs and have spent quite a long time with it. So you wanted to get both those perspectives, both from the bench and from the attorneys who are trying to plead their case in front of the bench.
Do you have a favorite interview?
I had never met a single Supreme Court justice before this project, and getting a chance to be, even though I didn't do the interviews, I helped prepare Brian and Susan to do them, and then I was in the room for all of them. And just to watch some of the best legal minds in our country answer questions and think about them, and you get a real sense of who they are as human beings as well. So that, to me, was sort of a thrill, just to be in there to sort of see their mind racing in front of you and thinking about things. And then, in terms of the other interviews, Lyle is just, I learned a lot about the history of the court and the personalities over there. Warren Burger, I went to William & Mary, and Warren Burger was the chancellor of William & Mary for a while. And I thought, he's a Supreme Court Chief Justice, and what a great human being he must be. And you get a chance to sit down and talk with someone who's really studied the court and Justice Burger, and I learned a lot. I mean, I learned a lot throughout it, but with interviews like with Lyle, I really, you get to a different level of learning. So I feel like I come out of it with a graduate degree. So it's hard for me to say what my favorite one is.
So I want to ask you a bit more generally about C-SPAN's relationship with the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
I know that C-SPAN sometimes requests that for oral arguments in cases of great public interest, the audio recording of the argument be released the same day as
right.
the argument, rather than at the end of the term, as is usual.
Right.
Does C-SPAN frequently make those requests, and how often are they granted?
each term there are a number of cases with that we think raise to the level, of national importance that we have requested those same day audio. And we had pretty good luck at the beginning, and I have to say just recently, within the last term or two, we have been denied far more frequently than we have been. Zero this last term is what we have been granted out of 9 requests, and none of them have been granted. We scratch our heads and wonder why.
Yeah. I actually want to bring onto the table a topic that was off the table for the interviews with the justices.
Okay.
So you've gotten access to the Supreme Court chambers at this point. Are cameras in the courtroom the next big step for C-SPAN? And when, if ever, do you see it happening?
Well, we're there for them when they say, okay, let's have cameras in the courtroom. I mean, it's encouraging to see a new justice like Justice Sotomayor who had cameras in her courtroom before. Mm-hmm. And maybe the tide will change at some point. That's like the $64,000 question, though. and it'll be a fly on the wall when they talk about it over there to figure out why they won't do it and how that decision is made. Is it just one justice who doesn't like the idea and so they don't do it, or is it a majority of them who aren't for the idea? And I actually, when I interviewed Lyle, I asked him about cameras in the courtroom, and I thought, as a longtime journalist over there, he might be a little bit more traditional, so I thought he might not think it's a good idea. He actually thought it was a great idea, and he doesn't understand why they don't do it. He doesn't get why one of the biggest thespians on the court, Scalia, is the most against it, because he might benefit from it most. But it's hard to say. There's lots of theories why they've said no, and we're just speculating at this point. Why, and the other speculation is when.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us on SCOTUS Blog.
Thank you, Aaron. Appreciate it.